Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for October 6, 2011. While reviewing a journal the other day, I realized it's been just over a year since I found out that Chasing the Wind won the 2010 Word Alive Press Publishing Contest in the nonfiction category. It's been a whirlwind of a year, beginning with editing, reading proofs, and finally having the published books arrive on my doorstep. There was a book launch, interviews, media appearances, and last week a writer's panel discussion. And there was also the pleasure of finding copies of Chasing the Wind in Chapters and in Christian bookstores from here to Chatham. Well, looking back on the last year, I began wondering what I learned. Actually, it wasn't so much what I learned, but how much of what I knew about book publishing was confirmed. First, I relearned that writing a book is easier than publishing it. After about a decade of submitting the manuscript and getting rejection after rejection, I almost gave up on it. If it hadn't been for winning the contest, I'm not sure if Chasing the Wind would have been published. Second, I relearned how much work it takes to market your book, and if you are a writer and aren't willing to get out there and market it, you'll end up with boxes of books in your basement and returns to the publisher. But as challenging as the book publishing industry is, the greatest joy comes from the comments of those who read your book. I didn't write Chasing the Wind for fame and fortune. I wrote it because I found the wisdom of Ecclesiastes is just as relevant today as it was when it was written. And from the comments that I've received about the book, a number of people are finding the same thing, and that makes all the hard work of the publishing cycle worth it. Well, if you want to make a comment on today's program or get more information about it, send an email to Robert at Selah Ministries. That's Robert at selawministries.ca. Keep listening, and I'll repeat the email address at the end of today's show. That was Panis Angelicus from the CD It Is Well by Derek Paul Miller, who's currently spending his time performing in his native New Brunswick. While Christopher Van Donkler was initially trained in the traditional methods of painting icons by monks, now, his website says, he's taken the bedrock of the iconographic art form as foundation of his own unflinching and inexhaustible curiosity. On the phone with us tonight to talk about his art is Christopher Van Donkler. Good evening, Christopher.
Hi, Robert.
Now, the last time we talked was a couple of years ago, and you were working on the 100 Mile Art Project for the Cambridge Center for the Arts. How well was that received?
Oh, it was actually a really great project. It was done specifically within the Cambridge area, within 100 miles of the city center. And the community itself got involved both in actually creating the pigments and the wood and everything else that was needed for the project, but it was also well received through the openings and everything else. What was exciting about the project was that it even ended up being talked about at a national level. And so CBC ran an article on it, Canadian Geographic ran an article on it, and so those were the big ones. Although I have to say probably my favorites were some of the kids' magazines that got involved and started, inspiring, hopefully, the next generation about how they can use the materials around them to create art.
Well, and I guess the other thing I'm thinking is how you as an artist felt it turned out. I mean, it's always difficult. I was reading a quote the other day that said that art is never finished. It's just abandoned. We just get to the point where we have to produce the material. But how did you feel the whole project turned out?
Well, the project had a number of aspects. And so as far as the, actually learning about the dirt under our feet, the different colors that actually exist in the dirt through ochres and others, that certainly is something that never will be finished. But at the same time, it was something which therefore will continue beyond the project and was always understood to. So that was comfortable. The harder part was actually having the exhibition, the final icon and such. And those were things which were harder to see as being done. Although, like you said, they have to be, and they're abandoned or just simply taken away from you. Those things were a first attempt. And while they were enjoyed, I'm hoping to have other opportunities to explore the same idea in different ways and maybe, hopefully do even better.
Yeah, and I know that you're working on some of those things from some of the stuff I checked on your website, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But let's go back to the beginning. When did you first get interested in art?
Well, my it was visiting a monastery down in Ohio in a small town called Galion, which is just north of Cleveland. I was in university at that point studying music and history, doing a double major. But I was down there during reading week, and it was really through the invitation of one of the monks to learn iconography that opened up the whole world of art to me.
Now, what sort of take us on that journey again, because that's been a significant part of your development as an artist.
Sure. Well, really, I mean, it's a funny story, but up until that point, my interests, in understanding, interpreting my faith in my life had been through these other disciplines. On a Monday morning, I was in this unfinished chapel, just sort of looking at the different icons and trying to figure out the narratives and the stories and what was happening. And one of the monks there, sort of the head iconographer, a man called Father Nathaniel, had just put down some gesso on this rather large circle medallion that he was going to paint. And it became apparent to him that after he put the gesso down, which is applied hot, and once it cools, it hardens and you can't do anything with it anymore. So before it cools, it's really important that you smooth it out with a palette knife. And he suddenly realized that he couldn't reach the center of the circle. I'm fairly tall and have long arms and that, and he decided that, any help, some help was better than no help, so he just gave me the palette knife and said, "Here, smooth this out." And I was happy to help. But it was interesting, when I was done, I gave him back the palette knife and he held on to it and said, "You need to learn iconography." That just began, probably 5-6 years of me journeying down to the monastery and spending between a week and to a month at a time in the monastery, learning the very traditional forms behind iconography. We have icons that go back to the 6th century. It certainly, when you think about the catacombs and that, it was an early way in which Christians responded to the good news, was to pictorially represent it. And iconography is such a long tradition that it's been very much enriched through really very talented artists, but also cultures and places. And so it's something which, as you delve into, you know, you learn everything from the very very physical aspects of how to sand a gesso board properly and such, but also the symbolisms, the colors, and what the icons are responding to, as well as some of the sacramental understanding behind the icons.
Now, some of our listeners come from a more conservative tradition that might not be familiar with icons and the use of icons. What makes iconography different and significant from other types of paintings that they may see?
Well, that's a really good question. There's a beautiful quote by the current bishop of England, Orthodox bishop, a man called Calistus Ware, who wrote in an article about how Van Gogh, his one of his last pictures, maybe actually his last, The Crows in the Cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote in this is a very traditional publication, but he wrote that when the day of judgment comes, the angels will present Van Gogh's paintings as if they were icons to defend his life and his what he did that was pleasing to God in his life. And so, I mean, there's aspects of iconography that that exist throughout any good painting. What's probably unique about iconography is that, of course, the subject matter it always has to do with stories from the Bible, people from the Bible, and saints. Those people who are understood to have run the good run, now be part of the great cloud of witnesses. So of course, that subject matter is very important. There's also an understanding within it, though, of something which the Orthodox have called before windows into heaven, which maybe is something important to mention. And this is the understanding that the icons aren't something which purely is for us to look at, but it's something for us to relate to, intended to encourage and such. And in some way, probably a really good way to explain that would actually be, I remember watching my grandmother after my grandfather died, talking to the picture she kept of him just beside the dining room table. And it was interesting to realize that that's another important aspect in iconography, is that this idea that while the picture itself is painted with care and meant to be beautiful and a number of other things, really the purpose of the icon is to help those of us on this side of glory relate to those on the other side and ultimately then to Christ himself.
So it's not just looking at the physical beauty of an icon, and I've seen some icons and been in some Orthodox and Orthodox churches where there are icons. It's not just the beauty of the icon; it's the fact that it's helping you to draw closer to God at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, when you boil it right down, a good icon is one that you can pray with.
Mm. Well, what I need to do is take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Christopher Van Donkler. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Last night I lay asleeping, there came a dream. Jerusalem, beside the temple there.
And once again the scene was changed, new earth there seemed to be. I saw the holy city beside the tideless sea. The light of God was on its streets, the gates were open wide, and all who would might enter, and no one was denied. No need of moon or stars by night, or sun to shine by day. It was the new Jerusalem that would not pass away. It was the new Jerusalem that would not pass away.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to The Holy City from Derek Paul Miller's CD, It Is Well. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with artist Christopher Van Donkler. Now, Christopher, are you still working on icons after doing the 100 Mile Art Project? Is iconography still something you're involved with?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Beginning of this year, I did another exhibition up in Ellora, which culminated with a pair of icons I painted of St. Barbara. So the icons are still really the center of my own art practice. But I've also had opportunity to, through beginning with a project like the 100 Mile Art Project, to also start focusing on other ways in which spaces can be used to introduce aspects of the icon and maybe tell the story behind them.
Well, one of the and maybe this is getting into it, is one of the things your website says, and I quote at the beginning, is you've taken the bedrock of the iconographic art form as a foundation for your own unflinching and inexhaustible curiosity. Sort of unpack that for us and what it means in terms of what you're doing artistically.
Yeah, that was something Stephen Strauss said, and I asked him if I could put it on the website, and he said, sure. Yes, in this case, one of the aspects that has become very interesting to me currently is the idea of how we relate to place through our art, through our lives, and everything else, simply through our interaction with nature. And this began with the 100 Mile Art Project. One of the purposes of that project was to actually demonstrate how our interactions with our environment aren't always negative. And how we can actually create beautiful things and do beautiful works, and our role as stewards is so central to what can be very good in the world. But I also wanted then to take that and go a step further and also demonstrate how our environment can also then be very good and produce beautiful things in ourselves. So rather than having it just a one-way conversation, we take the earth and make something out of it. When we do that, the earth also makes something out of us. And this is an idea that I've loosely dubbed local color. And it's something which I'm now exploring, again, using the icons and other exhibitions and other works like that. But it's another aspect of something which has a history within the icons. But not a really big history here in Canada. So it's something which I'm playing with and, I guess, presenting through my art.
And part of one of the presentations was Berlin this past year?
That's right, yes.
And how did that come about?
Oh, well, that came about through my final... the exhibition there was actually one of the final pieces of me completing my graduate work in fine arts. And so I actually went to Berlin to participate in this exhibition, to also defend my thesis, which is also on the idea of how place and color relate, place and pigments relate in local color. Gave a couple workshops, took a class, and everything else. And so, how it came about, the response to it was actually really interesting. People began to play with what I was introducing them to in colored pigments in right as art material, and started interpreting it in their own ways. And so one person decided they wanted to start painting bricks on an old abandoned building. Another person actually started doing portraiture. And another person was talking about how they actually wanted to introduce this in their kindergarten class. So all those things were actually really fun to watch.
In terms of doing that, what have been some of the things you've discovered and some of the new materials you've discovered in the whole local art and in the whole local pigment aspect?
Right. Well, what I've started doing, just to give a bit of background, is, for example, the St. Barbara icons that I mentioned, each one of those was actually painted using only a single rock. And so by using some very basic, primitive, non-destructive processes, you can actually draw other colors from the same specimen, right? And so from the same area. What's so interesting to me about that was that the two icons give a very different impression of St. Barbara, the patron saint of all kinds of things, but specifically in this case of geology. So to make those icons, I traveled to two different places. In the first place, I traveled to Medoc, which is just outside of Ottawa on Highway 7. It's a place that has a really interesting geology of iron, coppers, and everything else. And so you get a really broad range of colors. And by drawing from what was there within this very, very small location, really kind of a handful of dirt in that case, I was able to produce a very bright icon, had lots of color. And so when you play with this icon, you have a sense of just a real vibrancy. The second place I traveled is actually about 7 hours north of Waterloo, a village now, used to be quite a thriving metropolis, called Cobalt, which was famous for its silver. The silver is mostly gone, so I wasn't able to find a lot of that. But what I went for is actually different pigment colors again, right? And there I found a mineral called anabergite. And that's actually not a very nice mineral. It's actually arsenic, nickel. And it's something which but you can still paint with if you're careful, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, really, you know, it you get green. It's green. If you heat it, one of the things I do is actually fire them. So if you put them in the fire, it will go a little bit brownish, but that was it. And so the icon there is still actually really something which is it's actually a fairly meaningful icon to play with, but it gives a very different impression of something of how we relate to God. It's a much more quieter icon, a little bit more introspective. And so this is just, as I said, one little idea that I'm exploring through the iconographic medium in order to play a little bit with the idea of when we take our local earth and translate it into something representing our faith, you know, you have an opportunity then for the earth to actually also reveal something specific about God.
Well, there's so much we could keep exploring on that. I'm just listening and I'm thinking of the physical aspect of what you go through in terms of going and finding the materials as well in the iconography process, the physical things you have to do, and just how all of that relates to your artwork and spirituality and that. But I think, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I guess the one question quickly is what's next? What are you working on next?
Well, right now, I'm working on a series of commissions. School has kept me rather busy, and I've actually been telling people, no, I'm sorry, I can't paint an icon for you. But there were a couple of people who were willing to wait. So that's certainly keeping me busy. And really, the next thing I'm doing is writing some proposals to different villages and art centers and asking them if they'd like to participate in a local color map atlas that I'm actually creating, which will be, of course, for my own use iconographically, but also is intended for use with other artists in the region.
And where can people find out more about your work?
Well, right now the website is a little bit messy, but I am working on it. So if they go to www.vandonkelaar.ca, Van Donkelaar is VanDonkelaar, certainly if they dig around a little bit, they can find things. The website is one of the things that I'm working on, so it will get better, and people should probably check back over the next month if they're interested.
Great. Christopher, thanks for your time tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection tonight, and thanking my guest Christopher Van Donkelaar. Be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at Selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.